The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. You are listening to KHUH LP 104.9 FM Seattle. It is time for the Thunderbolt. And at the Thunderbolt, we believe in just saying no to boring public affairs programming. The Thunderbolt. Faster than a speeding bullet point. More powerful than multi-gigabyte bandwidth. Able to leap mixed metaphors in a single bound. Defending truth, justice, and the un-American way. Boldly going where no hack radio show has ever gone before. The Thunderbolt airs every week right here on KHUH. Listen at your own risk.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Welcome one and all to the Thunderbolt for February 3rd, 2023. So concerning the circus that surrounded the election of the Speaker of the House recently, everyone on the left and a lot of people on the right leveled serious criticism towards the Republican representatives who held up that nomination. But it will probably not surprise regular listeners to learn that I take a contrary view. What those representatives were doing was exactly what their constituents elected them to do, which is their job, after all. In addition, most of the demands that they were making concerned limiting the power of the Speaker of the House. Since the Speaker of the House might as well be called the Dictator of the House, and since I personally think there's entirely too much power resting in a single pair of hands in that case, then I fully supported the Republicans' effort to limit the power of the Speaker. And here is another thing to consider. Level all of the criticisms you may wish, the fact remains that the renegade Republicans got everything that they demanded. The power of the Speaker of the House has now been seriously diminished thanks to their efforts. And here's another thing to consider. The Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives is now the largest caucus in the House. Would that they were to start pushing their weight around in a similar manner. They claim to be there to bring humanitarian, progressive values to our government. And now they have the power to be able to actually do that. They could have demanded Medicare for all, for instance. Yet they have done jack all. While some of them made some token noise at first, these days, they virtually always fall right in line with whatever edicts are coming down from the war machine. I'm just saddened that it took a bunch of right-wing nutcases to demonstrate this point. Yes, people, back in the halcyon days of 2021, the Progressive Caucus could have insisted upon anything that they wanted from Nancy Pelosi. Instead, they insisted upon absolutely nothing. And since then, other than saying lots of pretty words, they have continued their practice of doing nothing. And almost immediately upon assuming office, they began falling right in line with whatever edicts were coming down from the war machine. Ha! They have become typical Democrats, in other words. Note that during the 2 years that the Democrats were in charge of both houses of Congress and the presidency, not a single one of them even mentioned the public option, much less Medicare for all. Also note that there are no longer any questions about how Nancy Pelosi became a multi-millionaire on her congressional salary. Probably because nearly all Congress members very quickly become multi-millionaires on their congressional salaries. That is probably also why no one called Nancy Pelosi out when she recently killed a bill that would have made it illegal for members of Congress to profit from their inside knowledge when conducting stock trades. Yes, back in 2021, it was suggested to the Progressive Caucus that they should withhold their vote for Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House without the promise of a House vote on Medicare for All. However, the squad explained they couldn't do that because Medicare for All did not have enough votes to pass. This completely ignored the fact that a vote for Medicare for All would have put everyone in Congress on the record as voting either for or against a policy that is favored by 70% of the public right in the middle of a pandemic. It would have also triggered several days of debate and extensive media coverage concerning Medicare for All, which would have been a great educational opportunity. However, they also came up with a second excuse. It was explained to us at the time that if they did not vote for Nancy Pelosi, then Kevin McCarthy would win the speakership. And thus the left proves that they are also capable of pushing big lies. And while I pride myself on my ability to see through political subterfuges, at the time, I must confess that I fell for the Kevin McCarthy will win line myself without checking to see if it was actually true. Yes, back in 2021.
Rock and roll is calling you. Rock for me.
Yes, Kevin McCarthy, at that time, would have needed a majority of the votes, which would have meant several Democrats voting for him. And I can guarantee you that that would have never happened. This was a lie pushed by several respected and well-known pundits on the left, especially including David Sirota, Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, and Ryan Grimm of The Intercept. And you may remember that back when The Intercept was purchased by the infamous billionaire Pierre Omidyar, I feared that The Intercept would become merely another outlet for corporate propaganda. And so once again, do not say that I did not warn you.
Rock and roll is calling you. Rock for me, I'll rock for you. Answer when the roll is called. Sign your name and that is all. Everybody, one and all. Rock and roll and have a ball.
Yes. I could be generous and assume that all of these very knowledgeable pundits were simply misinformed or mistaken, but they should have known better, and they pushed this lie everywhere, including to a lot of other people who also should have known better. And yet to this day, nobody has ever corrected that lie, much less apologized for it. Evidently, Nancy Pelosi and the squad have now bonded. So this week's Thunderbolt begins a series of stories about some historical heroes. Concerning heroes and the need for them, the central purpose of a hero is to provide a role model for other potential change makers. They inspire us to emulate their dedication and to live up to their examples. So the first role model I would like to highlight was a gentleman from the early 19th century named Charles Deslandes, D-E-S-L-O-N-D-E, who was the central organizer of the German Coast Slave Rebellion of 1811. Now, the Haitian Revolution of 1803 was the only successful slave rebellion in recorded history. And Haiti has never been forgiven for that. One of the central reasons that Haiti is such a hellhole to this day is due to the centuries-long payback for that outrage. And meanwhile, before slavery was outlawed here in the United States, There were over 300 documented slave rebellions within the territory of the United States. And I find it interesting that the slave revolt led by Nat Turner in 1831 has become so famous, whilst the much larger and much more significant slave revolt of 1811, led by Charles de Lond, is largely forgotten. Both men, however, claimed the Haitian Revolution as inspiration for their own rebellions. Mr. de Lond not only led the German Coast Rebellion, but he came up with a plan that almost succeeded in taking New Orleans. He visualized a two-prong attack. He and his 200 to 500 men, accounts vary on that, they would move along the Mississippi River and attack plantations to seize arms and to recruit rebels, while at the same time slaves within New Orleans would attack and seize the arsenal there and establish an armed beachhead inside the city. However, white militiamen, who had also been highly influenced by the revolution in Haiti, already had well-established protocols in place should such a happenstance occur, and they managed to mobilize in time to defeat DeLon's forces just short of New Orleans. A man named Samuel Hambolton, with a B, described DeLon's fate. Quote, Charles de Lond had his hands chopped off and then was shot in one thigh and then the other until they were both broken. Then shot in the body. And before he had expired, he was put into a bundle of straw and roasted. His dying cries on January 11th, 1811, sent a message to the other escaped slaves who were still hiding in the marshes. Unquote. Before the assault, Mr. de Lond reportedly said that his goal was either freedom or death. Therefore, Mr. de Lond achieved at least one of his goals. There is an old joke that goes, do you want to talk to the boss, or do you want to talk to somebody who knows what's really going on? Yes, I am often amazed at how incredibly many things there are that people who are in positions of power don't know. Especially since their ignorance often produces such profoundly dire consequences. This happens because people at the top of large organizations and or large governments almost always have most, if not all, of their information filtered through a small army of lackeys. Thus, it is these lackeys who determine what the person at the top knows and or doesn't know. Thus, what that person at the top knows and or doesn't know is often subject to the personal agendas and ambitions of these lackeys. So I am forgetting all the details, but a while back, Greenpeace was organizing a campaign against Japanese whaling, and they invited Greenpeace members to name a whale that they had tagged and that they were going to track through the Japanese slaughter. The name the members came up with was Mr. Splashy Pants. However, high up muckety mucks within the Greenpeace organization objected to this name. They said, "This is a serious issue, and we require a serious response." Obviously, the management at Greenpeace do not follow the Thunderbolt maxim that some things are far too important to be taken too seriously, and that you should joke them if they can't take a yeah. However, evidently, there was at least one person within the Greenpeace management who convinced the rest to just go with the flow, since that was indeed the name the members had chosen. I will also conjecture the possibility that this person was guilty of having a sense of humor, a trait often absent in upper management types. And then, of course, the name went viral and exploded in the press and on online media, thus achieving its goal of promoting awareness of Japanese whaling. So along the same lines, again, I'm forgetting the irrelevant details, but evidently fans of professional hockey get a vote on who plays in the All-Star game every year. Then one year, the owners angered the fans in some manner, and the fans decided to get their revenge by using their vote to put the most hated player in the league on the All-Star team. The player's name was John Scott. Now, John Scott was what in hockey world is called a goon. John Scott was not very good at skating. He was not very good at shooting. He was not very good at passing. What he was good at was causing injuries to players on the opposing team. Now, Mr. Scott would not normally win any popularity contests.
So therefore, when John Scott received more votes than any other player in the league to play in the All-Star game, the high-up muckety-mucks threw a conniption fit and did everything they could to prevent Scott from playing in the All-Star game.
They even had him traded to another team who instantly demoted him to a minor league team. However, there was no rule against a minor league player playing in the All-Star game, and the owners did have enough wherewithal to understand that the fans would not stand for Mr. Scott's exclusion anyway. The owners even begged John Scott to simply refuse to play, going so far as to asking him what he thought his father and his children would think of this. But John Scott refused their entreaties and thus appeared in the All-Star game. Very soon after the game started, John Scott got control of the puck while the goaltender was out of position, thus giving John Scott a wide open shot. Mr. Scott took the shot, and just as he realized that his shot was going to miss, the goalie, who was diving to block his shot, did indeed block the shot, but ended up deflecting the puck at just the right angle to send it into the net. And thus, John Scott, who had previously scored only one goal for the entire season and who was literally playing against the best of the best that the game had to offer, and whose presence in this game was literally a joke, scored the first goal. Then he scored a second goal, this time shooting around the goalie and hitting the corner, and thus led his team to eventual victory. After the game, Mr. Scott was carried off the field on the shoulders of his teammates. Then he was voted the MVP of the All-Star Series, even though the managers and owners had somehow failed to include his name on the ballot. In addition, Mr. Scott had obviously been having the time of his life all during the game, and the fans had absolutely loved it. None of us is smarter than all of us. Bottom up almost always seems to work better. Maybe we should apply this same strategy to public affairs. We're going to take a quick station break now. We'll be back in just a minute.
This program is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. If this program makes your head explode or causes emotional distress, or if you suddenly feel as if life suddenly isn't worth living anymore due to the things you learn on this program, then you should blame yourself for the fact that you're such a wimp that you let the world push you around in such a manner, rather than blaming the producers of some radio show, much less blaming the radio station that is airing the show. And you should maybe soon become a Zen master and or a used car salesman and or an astronaut or whatever, rather than trying to educate yourself about things that are simply going to twist your worldview into a pretzel, making your continued existence on this plane problematic. If you have useful suggestions, or if you wish to participate in meaningful debate, then bring it on. But otherwise, if you aren't going to help, then please just shut up and get out of our way, so that we can do what needs to be done. Have a nice day.
It is pretty much axiomatic that you can gauge the effectiveness of your organizing techniques by how much effort the oppression machine puts into silencing you. Well, if we judge from that standard, then the international workers of the world, the IWW, would have to qualify as being one of the most effective organizing organs in American history. Founded in 1905, the IWW, or the Wobblies, are most known for their revolutionary organizing efforts during the opening decades of the 20th century. Yes, people, this amazing union brought together skilled and unskilled workers across the country and far beyond U.S. borders. They were overtly revolutionary, and they were committed to bringing down the practice of wage labor itself. They were apolitical, and that they considered the entire system to be in service to the elites, and only the elites. Do those views sound familiar to you? And unlike other unions at the time, the Wobblies organized the unskilled racial minorities and women. their effectiveness can be gauged by the fact that they were eventually crushed by a combination of organized and systemic state violence, combined with a good deal of state-sanctioned vigilantism. And in fact, the suppression of the Wobblies was probably the most severe breach of civil liberties in American history. After campaigning and winning re-election on the slogan, "He kept us out of the war," the Woodrow Wilson administration did a complete 180 and hired Edward Bernays to spearhead a massive public relations campaign to turn American public opinion around and support entering the war. Part of this effort was a massive campaign to silence all critics of entering the war, and they passed special legislation making it much easier to oppress all opposition to the war. And after entry into the war, they passed legislation literally making it illegal to criticize the American war efforts. A lot of newspaper publishers went to prison based upon this law. So while they were indeed overtly anti-war, what the Wobblies were actually guilty of was leading a large number of highly successful strikes during the lead-up to America's entry into World War I, thereby taking a large target on their own backs. Yes, the war machine took advantage of the widespread oppression that was happening at that time to make a serious attempt at completely destroying the Wobblies. An end that they did indeed eventually achieve. Yes, many organizations were subjected to brutal oppression during this period. The socialists, the pacifists, black nationalists, in fact, pretty much all dissident organizations. But none of these other organizations suffered nearly the grief that was piled upon the Wobblies. The suppression went from the White House all the way down to governors and local sheriffs and local prosecutors. Suppression of the Wobblies also led directly to the first Red Scare. Lasted from the time of the Russian Revolution in 1917, well into the 1920s. Over in Russia, they had not only overthrown a dynasty that had been in place for almost 900 years, but they had murdered every member of the royal family they could get their hands on, including the emperor himself, and his wife, and his five children. They killed all of the emperor's maids and waitstaff as well. Now, this obviously terrified elites the world over. And when, after their many alarming successes, the Wobblies began organizing Soviets all over the United States, the suppression of the Wobblies took on even more urgency. Though, rather ironically, the Wobblies never really got along with the Communist Party of America. That's another story. So this brutal campaign of oppression and suppression against the left in general, and the Wobblies in particular, also had the wholehearted support of such liberal luminaries as President Woodrow Wilson, the Supreme Court Justices Oliver Wendell Holmes and Louis Brandeis. So their tactics included numerous federal prosecutions under the then newly minted and now newly again infamous Espionage Act, which represented the first widespread use of, quote, conspiracy laws, unquote, to prosecute people. Now, under conspiracy theory, they would say that such and such crime was a conspiracy and that everyone involved in this conspiracy were equally guilty of violating the law, even if they had not themselves broken any laws, and even if they had been unaware of the activities of their cohorts. They sentenced hundreds of union members to lengthy prison sentences using this method. And meanwhile, also starting in 1917, a total of 20 states passed a bunch of syndicalism laws. And these laws were enacted for the express purpose of criminalizing the industrial workers of the world. Yes, these laws stated that it was not only illegal to advocate bringing about political or industrial change through, quote, illegal methods, unquote, but it was also illegal to belong to any organization that advocated bringing about political or industrial change through, quote, illegal methods, unquote. Thus, all they needed to do was to prove that you were a member of the IWW, and you were sent off to a lengthy prison term. Hundreds of union members also suffered this fate. By far the most common method, though, was through local vagrancy laws. Though the sentences were significantly shorter, the Espionage Act or syndicalism prosecutions, they were cheap, easy, and quick. Thousands of such prosecutions happened, and they effectively disrupted organizing efforts, removed offending union organizers from the field, and punished people for daring to speak out. It soon became a common joke amongst the members that their red union cards represented a free ticket to jail. In addition, the Wobblies were often physically attacked, and their offices were routinely burned down. In 1916, a ship full of Wobblies attempting to dock in Everett, Washington, were met with a mob of 200 rioters led by the local sheriff. And around a dozen of the Union men were shot dead. Now, the Wobblies were not pacifists. While they eschewed violence as an organizing tactic, they felt that they had every right to defend themselves when violently attacked by others. In addition, the IWW often seemed to invite such violent confrontations with their detractors. Throughout 1919, for instance, the Centralia office of the IWW had been repeatedly attacked. And so, when the Union Hall was once again attacked during an Armistice Day celebration, this time the Wobblies inside shot back, killing several of the American Legionnaires who had been participating in the assault. As a result of daring to defend themselves, one Wobbly was lynched, whilst several others were subsequently convicted of second-degree murder and subjected to lengthy prison sentences. The ultimate legacy of the Wobblies is one of undaunted courage in the face of brutal oppression of a kind that has not been seen since. Thousands of workers were knowingly willing to risk their very lives for their cause, and that kind of courage just doesn't seem to exist in the United States any longer. Whatever. It would be better if we could figure out how to organize in a manner that doesn't involve having our organization subsequently destroyed by forces both from without and within, and ideas on that subject would actually be welcome, because we haven't seemed to come up with a way to counter COINTELPRO. It seems to work, and we need to figure out to make it stop working. Anyway, it's time to get to work. But first, I'm going to play some music. Just a note to Olympia listeners, now that I'm not living in Olympia anymore, I can't really do a calendar. I am publishing the Fellowship of Reconciliation's calendar of events in my newsletter, though. And I'm doing a couple of newsletters a month now. So if you would like to get a calendar, you should subscribe to my newsletter. Anyway, I'm going to feature some music this week that's really, really weird, but really, really good. This is Ego Plum and his Ebola Music Orchestra. Enjoy!
da, nichim soin va. Ai, bullion, leave shall chu ko ni sunshine. Tau, tau. Da da di da 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 di da 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 di da da di da 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 di da di da di da di da 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 di da di da 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 di da da di da 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 di da di da da di da da di da 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 da di da 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 di da di da da di da 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 di da 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 di da 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 di da 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 di da da di da 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 di da di da 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 di da 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 di da I fatto san Dio su Ion show why from omla Zia Can you hear it? Can you hear it now? Hearing the words, can you hear? Da da di da 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 di da 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 di da da di da 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 di da di da da di da 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 di da. In Taiyo Wai Yo Hoodoo. He rav me inside. Zian hiya amoto. Zian hiya armoto. Humbo na humbo holo. Humbo na humbo holo. Hearing the words, can you hear it? Can you hear it out? Da 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 da
Yeah, that was Hambu Hoodoo from Reynaldo and the Loaf. And before that, we had the Amputots from Ego Plum and his Ebola Music Orchestra. We'll see you next week. In the meanwhile...
Thank you very much.